Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we're talking about vaccinations and what you need to know. It is the focus of this year's Rosalind Payne Epps Lecture tomorrow, September 8th at 11 a.m. at Howard University Hospital. It is free. You're certainly welcome to attend. The guest lecturer is Dr. Paul Offit. He is the director of the Vaccine Education Center at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. We're still taking questions tonight, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Dr. Offit, please continue your point.
Yeah, I think that the caller raised an interesting point. I mean, why is it there are increased rates? There are some things that are different now. I think one thing is we tend to have children when we're older. And, you know, it's because this is clearly a, at the very least, a genetic disorder. You know, that genes are more friable as you get older. And so I think that's probably part of it. And I do think that there is clearly an increased recognition of the disorder. There's also been a broadening of the disorder. What used to be sort of primary autism has become an autism spectrum that I think includes sort of a number of personality types that wouldn't have been labeled autism before. So I think all those things weigh in this. But you can say this, though, vaccines don't cause it. I mean, of all the sort of external factors that have been examined, nothing has been examined more than vaccines. And I think what we've learned is that vaccines aren't the cause. I think there's been, frankly, a lot of money spent answering this question, which was, I think, a very fruitless dead-end hypothesis.
And the point that I was going to make before the break also, which you touched on, is that modern medical science, not just for autism, but for a wide array of ailments and diseases and afflictions, has become extremely good at identifying and naming things and understanding what is impacting the medical conditions of the modern human being. And as you suggested, you know, you could argue that during the course of your childhood, during the 1950s, you may not have known so much more about it because you only saw what was in your immediate purview. There was no internet there. Television was not as pervasive as it is now. And so there is a lot of information that is bombarding, parents and the like, and they just know so much, and medical science knows so much. Am I off base here?
No, I think that's exactly right. I think we know a lot more, and I think certainly the internet has enabled us also as a public, as a general public, to know a lot more. But we also know a lot that's not true. It's the problem. It's not how much we know, but how much we know that's not true in part two. And I think that first caller, you know, I think was scared by the internet, scared to the point that she's chosen not to vaccinate her child and thus put her child at unnecessary risk. So it's the good news and bad news.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Wendy calling from Maryland. What's on your mind?
Hi. If you never had the chicken pox, did you get the vaccine as an adult?
That's a good question. So if you've had the chicken pox as a child, you do not need the chicken pox vaccine as a child. Now, when you get older, when you get over 60 years of age, you should get the shingles vaccine because that sort of prevents essentially the reawakening or reactivation of the chickenpox infection you've had that can cause shingles. So you don't. If you've gotten chickenpox, you don't need the chickenpox vaccine, but you do need the shingles vaccine, which comes when you're over 60.
All right. Amy, thank you so much. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Cornelius calling from Waldorf. Thanks for calling, Cornelius. What's on your mind?
How you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have two young daughters, all right, and there has, excuse me, there's been an issue about or a debate about whether they should or should not have the HPV vaccine. I've heard different things about it. Their mother is against it because she believes or she's read or she's been told, I'm not sure, that it has a potential of causing some type of cervical cancer or some type of what could be difficulties down the line. Excuse me for being so ignorant on the subject, but I just wanted to know more information about the HPV virus, if you could share that and kind of sum it up, or the HPV vaccine, excuse me, that, you know, you could share whatever you could share with that, so I have more knowledge to make a decision of whether it is something I do or do not want them to have.
Well, certainly I would not say that you're ignorant. You're a concerned father, and I think that is admirable, and we certainly salute you calling in on the program to get as much information as you can to make sure that your daughters are healthy. Quickly, how old are your daughters?
They are 16 and 14.
Okay. Doctor, let's back up a little bit. What is HPV, first of all?
Yeah, so HPV is human papillomavirus. It's a virus that causes cervical cancers as well as anal and genital and head and neck cancers. Every year, that virus in the United States causes 29,000 people to have cancer and about 5,000 die from those cancers. If you had to answer the question, what vaccine prevents more suffering, more disease, and more death than any other, it's HPV vaccine. So it's, I would argue, the most important vaccine. But Cornelius raises an important issue, which is, for whatever reason, that vaccine seems to have a lot of myths that surround it. Now, the vaccine was first licensed in 2006, so it's been around for more than 10 years. It was tested in 30,000 people for 7 years before it was licensed. No vaccine has been tested in a larger number of people formally post-licensure than the HPV vaccine. It's been tested in 1 million people formally, meaning in published studies post-licensure. The only side effect that that vaccine consistently causes is fainting. That's it. It doesn't, you don't actually don't even have to get the vaccine. Just unsheathing the needle is good enough, or even being second in line. So that's true. It causes fainting, but the vaccine is made by just taking a protein that sits on the surface of the HPV virus, and it's made, so it's just the protein, and it's from a protein from 9 different strains. So it doesn't contain any genetic material. Therefore, it can't possibly cause cancer. So I don't know why that comes up. And it's usually ovarian cancer is what people say, but this has been studied and it doesn't do that. So your children are 14 and 16, they're certainly, the vaccine is recommended, you know, starting at 11, primarily for the 11 to 13 year old. But, you know, the everybody who is, of an age where they could have sexual activity benefits from this vaccine. So please get your daughters immunized. The fears that have surrounded that vaccine is ill-founded. And so please get them vaccinated.
You know, there's, right ahead, Cornelius. Please.
I'm sorry, if I could, why is it, once again, this is not something that I heard about when I was young. I don't know if it was a point of it being misdiagnosed, but it's kind of, you know, when something kind of hits now and it's something you've never heard of, I think that has a lot to do with why people may become leery of it. And, you know, it's just like, I'm in my 40s, so I don't remember during my adolescent stage anyone ever suffering or even hearing about HPV. Why is it, you know, so prominent now?
Well, you probably heard of cervical cancer, though.
Yes.
So, and actually, when I went to medical school, which was in the late 1970s, people didn't know the cause of cervical cancer. I mean, now we know that it's HPV that causes it. I mean, people knew that there were these cancers. But now we know that this is the virus that causes it, and now we know that we can make a vaccine to prevent it. And I think you're right. I think that's part of it, is that it's relatively new, meaning it's only been described as a cause of human cancer for about the last 40 years. But I think the thing actually that hurts that vaccine more than anything else is that it's really purely a sexually transmitted disease. And I think there's something that makes clinicians uncomfortable when they have an 11 or 12 year old in the office, that they feel compelled to say that this virus is only transmitted by the sexual route, when, you know, these children generally haven't had sex yet as an 11 year old. But, you know, it's only a preventive vaccine. It's not a therapeutic vaccine. Therefore, it has to be given before, you know, children have sex, which is why we give it to the 11 to 13 year old. But so I think that's hurt this vaccine. But I don't think clinicians need to say that. I think all they need to say is what it is, which is a cancer preventing vaccine.
You know, one of the other things too, Cornelius, that you said, and it struck a chord with me, was when you were a teenager, the doctor said you've of course heard of cervical cancer. I would venture to say that when I was also, you know, a teenager, and I'm a little bit older than you, while I may have heard of cervical cancer, if someone in my orbit, my familial orbit, had cervical cancer, I guarantee you that if I were a teenager, that they would not have told you what kind of cancer it was.
That's true. I agree with that.
Particularly if it was a female issue, you being a young male, they're going to say, you know, Aunt Janice, they may have told you she may have had cancer, but they most certainly would not have told you what kind. It's a lady, it's a woman's issue, and that's all you need to know. And right. And I think, you know, doctor, talk to me a little bit about just the need for families to constantly communicate about the realities of health information, whether it's vaccines or otherwise.
Yeah, no, I think you raise a really important point. There was a time when it was seen as somewhat shameful to have, you know, anal or genital or cervical cancers. And so it was sort of our dirty little secret. We didn't talk about it much. Interestingly, HPV is the only known cause of cervical cancer. It's just that virus. But I think, I think society has become more open and in many ways more honest, or at least in some sectors, you know, this is something that's now come out into the open, and hopefully we can be more comfortable with it. But I think Cornelius raises a good point. I would say of all the vaccines we give to children and to adolescents, this to me is America's most upsetting story, because only about 45% of girls who all girls and boys are recommended to receive this vaccine at 11 to 13 years of age. Only about 45% of girls get the vaccine, finish the series. Only about 20% of boys do. And it's just unconscionable. You know, this means the other thing I think is you don't see those cancers immediately. You know, you see these cancers 20 to 25 years after you get the infection. It comes up later in life. But we're condemning, because of these immunization rates, we're condemning about 2,000 children every year to grow up and die from a preventable cancer. And it's just unconscionable.
Well, Cornelius, thank you so much for calling in and raising a very, very important point. And I certainly hope that you have a chance to sit down with the mother of your children and certainly have an important conversation, because we want all children to be healthy. So, again, thank you so much for calling.
No problem. Thank you once again. You all have a good night.
You too. Thank you. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You know, doctor, you spoke earlier about side effects of some vaccinations, and even, you know, tongue in cheek, you know, you see those needles, and, you know, children don't want needles. Parents certainly don't want to see their children, you know, get those needles. I remember when my daughter was vaccinated, and, you know, she had these little Pillsbury Doughboy fat thighs, and that needle just going in. Oh, it just broke my heart. But, you know, but with that said, what kinds of side effects can be expected for the series of vaccinations that children all the way up to adolescents may encounter?
I think, well, the most common, obviously, is just pain or redness or tenderness at the site of injection. I think probably the most serious side effect is that you have an allergic reaction to one of the vaccine components. The most common, actually, is gelatin, which is used as a stabilizer, which enables the sort of generally the viral vaccine proteins to be equally distributed throughout the vial. So gelatin, which can cause a severe immediate hypersensitivity reaction, you know, where you get hives or you have difficulty breathing, your blood pressure goes lower. That happens immediately, by the way. It happens within about 15 minutes, which is why you're actually asked to stay in the office for about 15 minutes after you've gotten the vaccine, because they have, you know, the epinephrine and the equipment necessary to take care of you if that should happen. That happens in about 1 per 1.3 million doses. So it's rare, but it's real. I would say that's pretty much it. Well, the oral polio vaccine, which we don't use anymore in this country and haven't since the year 2000, that vaccine could itself cause polio. Again, it was rare. It was roughly 1 per 2.4 million doses, but it was real. That's why we don't give the oral polio vaccine anymore. We give the inactivated vaccine. Measles-containing vaccine can cause something called a lowering of the platelet count, which is a kind of cell type in your body that helps the blood to clot. So it can cause this sort of transient clotting or short-lived clotting disorder. It doesn't have any permanent sequelae, and it doesn't really do any long-term harm, but that can happen. It's about 1 per 30,000 doses. So, You know, I would argue, actually, that vaccines are the safest, best-tested things we put into our body, as they would have to be, because, we give them to healthy children. So I think we have to hold them to a very high standard of safety. Certainly, they're held to a much higher standard of safety than anything you're going to buy in the GNC center. Your dietary supplements and megavitamins. I mean, that's an unregulated industry. These products are being pulled off the shelf every week. And yet, I think if you asked 100 people, which do you think is safer? Vitamins, meaning megavitamins, the kind, that are like a thousandfold greater than the recommended daily allowance, which is safer for you, megavitamins or vaccines. I think people would say vitamins were safer, even though that's not true.
Need to take a break. When we come back, more about vaccines, vaccinations, and the medical health and safety of your child. We'll be back in just a moment.